Welcome to tonight's show. I'm Rudolf Hucker, and I'm hoping I didn't just make you yawn, but I'm settling in for the long haul.
I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and I'm going for a nap. Wake me up when we get there.
I'm your Heartless, and I'm feeling sick. Space sick.
I'm Normus Knockers, and I've bought sandwiches and a thermos for the trip.
I'm Sandy Crevice, and I should have gone before we left.
While we stop at the services to get this lot sorted out, let's have a look at, this week's headlines. Chuck chucks it in.
Concourse chaos as touch terminals go AWOL.
When it's a vanguard, not a vanguard. When it's a squadron, of course.
How much has that doggy made off with? We investigate.
I issue a warning about gravitationally bound detritus, the orbital malaise of Sol 3-like worlds.
And I round things off with the BGS bit.
In a rare moment of coordinated disengagement, a number of mid-level dignitaries, systems administrators, and one man with a tray of budget sandwiches gathered in a small departure bay at Jameson Memorial earlier this week to witness the quiet conclusion of a public-facing era. Commander Chuck Handgun, longtime Pilots Federation spokesperson and former Dome of the Year, 3305, runner-up 3306, and controversially disqualified in 3307 after being caught applying a reflectivity enhancer, later confirmed to be industrial lubricant, has retired. Without ceremony or keynote address, he reportedly nodded at a custodian, pointed vaguely in the direction of the exit, and boarded his chieftain. A faint waft of unfiltered cigar smoke lingered behind him, the kind that suggests either dignified departure or that something is gently on fire. Those present say the vessel powered up, hovered in silence for a moment, and then departed along a trajectory best described as unfiled. His final known transmission was intercepted by a passing Type 6, in which he was heard to mutter, "That's enough bandwidth for one lifetime," followed by a long play of something described by audio technicians as emotionally charged monologue in antique Terran dialect, possibly from someone called Shatner. Handgun's departure marks the end of a notable run at the Pilots Federation's Public Relations Division, a role defined by an extraordinary capacity to remain calm while being asked several thousand times per day whether he personally was responsible for this outrage. Also of note, Commander Handgun was not a small presence at Jameson. He's a titan, of the non-Thargoid kind, described by colleagues as
a gravitationally significant entity,
a structural consideration,
and once by an overawed junior staffer as
what you'd get if a battleship did customer service.
His exit leaves not just a metaphorical void, but a very literal depression in the studio, plus the dent in the ceiling where he jumped for joy on time that, live on air. It is expected the broadcast cipher will take several weeks to fully reinflate. Maintenance teams will be leaving the dent where it is in tribute. Known for his glossy scalp, diplomatic phrasing and refusal to acknowledge drama unless it was formatted correctly and submitted through the proper channels, he leaves behind a vacuum. Though whether metaphorical, administrative, or just the broken office hoover, no one is entirely sure. He takes with him three key possessions: his Hutton mug, still faintly warm, his Shatner archive, 12 volumes, 2 unreleased, 1 cursed, and a small engraved plaque that reads, "It's fine. Everything's fine." Where he's going is unknown, Speculation ranges from a self-imposed exile in the deep black to an unregistered listening post orbiting an unremarkable gas giant named Alan. A former colleague suggested he might finally be hunting the mythical quiet system, one devoid of traffic, signal sources, or strongly worded open letters. The Pilots Federation have issued a brief statement.
Commander Hangun's contributions were measurable. We thank him and we wish him fewer comms pings in future cycles.
From all of us here at Hutton Orbital, 07, fly straight, fly safe, and keep that mug upright. The galaxy is a little quieter today. Possibly just how he likes it.
Station concourses across the bubble have this week been left awkwardly blank-faced following a terminal shortage of, well, terminals. The interactive mission screens normally found bolted to high footfall areas, typically surrounded by at least one commander breathing heavily on them, have mysteriously disappeared in what authorities are now describing as an organized reallocation of public infrastructure. Initial reports were vague, citing technical outages and inventory rationalization exercises. However, a rapidly circulating internal memo from Hutton Orbital Logistics tagged urgent and for the love of Alvin, not again, has clarified matters. Three Hutton-affiliated individuals are believed to have personally overseen the wholesale removal of over 2,000 tons of touchscreen terminal units, citing operational needs related to this year's ECM gathering. They also ate all the cake. Witnesses place Commanders Wetherspoon, Vangtian, and Zaphod Beeble at the center of the incident. All three were reportedly observed docking Type 9 heavy vessels to various concourse service ports, loading bays, and at least one ceremonial plaza. Station security teams were caught off guard, believing the vessels to be part of a scheduled recycling initiative. One technician recalled seeing Commander Vantian carrying four terminals at once while muttering about ergonomics, neck strain, and the right to command a virtual starship by poking at things without squinting at squitty thing little screens from ancient laptops. Meanwhile, Commander Zaphod Beeble was reportedly last seen attempting to jury-rig a 48-inch tactical display into the snack bar at ECM HQ, citing tactical pretzel requirements. Commander Wetherspoon, when approached for comment, simply said,
"It's for educational purposes."
While carefully calibrating a haptic feedback setting to simulate a warp core breach. The sheer volume of hardware, repurposed, has left many stations with makeshift alternatives, including hand-scrawled mission instructions on napkins, shouted directions from behind railings, and in one extreme case, a station janitor reciting available contracts from memory. Pilots across the galaxy have responded with confusion, irritation, and, in at least three cases, a mild apprehension for the reduced temptation to just do one more cargo run. The Pilots Federation has declined to issue a formal statement, instead releasing a short animated GIF of a shrugging stick figure. Attempts to retrieve the terminals have been politely deflected by ECM organizers, who claim the equipment is now deeply integrated into the event infrastructure, and removing it could result in a cascading loss of simulated warp integrity. It's also understood that several units have been fitted with cup holders, which may legally classify them as personal effects under the Colonia Charter of Improvised Furniture. Efforts to track down any surplus have been complicated by the appearance of several auction listings on the grey market app, WhatBuy, where listings for gently used concourse terminals may contain mission data are trending sharply upwards. Pilots requiring access to missions are advised to use their shipboard systems, personal devices, or failing that, just ask Barry behind the bar, as he definitely not serving any drinks and has nothing better to do.
The Pirates Federation has this week announced a sweeping update to its squadron programme, aimed at making the entire experience feel more squadron-y, a term which, according to officials, tested well in focus groups primarily composed of whoever was in the bar at the time and one marketing intern with a clipboard. It's still better than Vanguard's, that evokes four burly men standing around a transit carrying truncheons. Among the most notable changes is a lifting of the squadron membership cap. Large, well-established groups such as Hutton Orbital Truckers will no longer be forced to operate on the long-standing one-out, one-in policy, a system that led to some unfortunate misunderstandings, at least one duel, and a regrettable incident involving an airlock and an overzealous application of the phrase,
"You snooze, you lose."
The update also brings the tantalising promise of personalised squadron decals. While the Pilots Federation insists this will allow for individual flair with an unified identity, early access materials confirm that, tragically, Hutton and Mug-themed decals remain entirely unavailable. Hutton representatives have confirmed that they will continue issuing decals the traditional way, with a cardboard stencil, a can of industrial spray paint, and a prayer to Alvin that the overspray doesn't hit the engine inlet and cause an explosion. Most concerning for financial authorities is the introduction of squadron banks, a shared treasury where credits can be hoarded by the thousands, if not millions. The Bank of Zeons has issued a cautious statement warning that large-scale saving by fuel-handling, mug-carrying trading collectives may result in the galaxy's first case of mattress stuffed with credits-based deflation. Meanwhile, Brewer Corporation has been spotted upgrading its shipyards across the galaxy in preparation for the introduction of squadron carriers, not to be confused with regular fleet carriers, though they remain similar in length. The new models are reportedly much wider, designed to accommodate entire command teams, three redundant hollow meeting rooms, and in Hutton's case, a medium-sized canteen staffed entirely by holograms of the same cheerful but increasingly nervous man. A spokesperson from Brewer explained,
"We looked at current carriers and thought, what if it was less long snake, more round lad? Like a carrier that's been at a buffet since 3308 and refuses to leave until they bring out the cheese board."
Perhaps the greatest challenge, however, lies in rank designations. With 15 distinct hierarchy slots now available, the Hutton Orbital Truckers have admitted that their classic structure, Trucker, Utter Trucker, Mother Trucker, and Cubicle 3 Attendant, plus the one we can never remember, something to do with spanners, is no longer sufficient. A task force has been assembled to develop new titles and is believed to be considering terms such as Executive Mug Bearer, Gin Deployment Officer, and Deputy Acting Assistant of Fuel and Biscuits. Reaction from squadron members has been mixed. Some are excited by the possibilities. Others are concerned about the implications for uniform embroidery costs. One anonymous source summed up the mood as follows.
"Wait, what, there's a bank now? Oh, I'm going to need a spreadsheet, and a safe, and possibly a lawyer."
The full update is expected to roll out soon, a term widely accepted to mean somewhere between now and the heat death of the galaxy.
The Federation's brief and tumultuous experiment with the bureaucratic streamlining has come to an abrupt and entirely unsurprising end this week, following the sudden disappearance of Calico Zach Rackham, former presidential hopeful, confirmed ex-pirate, and, until recently, head of the Department of Galactic General Interdepartmental Efficaciousness, or DOGGY. Rackham, who famously abandoned his Federation presidential campaign after disappointing electoral performance, colloquially referred to by analysts as losing, has been controversially appointed by Jerome Archer to lead DOGGY, a body intended to sniff out inefficiencies across federal departments and not chew on them inappropriately. Critics raised concerns at the time, noting that the appointment of a man with a history of armed robbery, larceny, and several confirmed counts of making off with things that were definitely nailed down, might not have been the ideal choice to manage fiscal responsibility. Those concerns have now been thoroughly vindicated. Sources within the Federal Accounting Directorate are currently investigating the apparent disappearance of several trillion credits from discretionary contingency subaccounts, one-of-a-kind historical tapestries, a ceremonial spanner from the Ministry of Bolts, and, most damning of all, what appears to be Jerome Archer's favourite bathrobe. The robe, described in official inventory logs as fluffy, Federation blue, with embroidered initials and a suspiciously warm pocket, was last seen hanging in the presidential residence. No forced entry was detected, and security logs have been accidentally deleted in accordance with DOGGY's new data hygiene protocols. Rackham's current whereabouts are unknown. However, unverified reports place him in orbit around LFT-926, where witnesses claim to have seen an unusually sleek prototype vessel being assembled in a private shipyard. Early designs suggest it may be the first vessel capable of hyperspace travel without the use of hydrogen scooping or tritium fuel, instead powered, apparently, by a combination of ambition, secrecy, and extremely flexible definitions of physics. The project, dubbed Project Hiccup, is rumoured to utilise something called subquantum tickle drive, a propulsion system that experts agree doesn't exist, but which has been loudly patented in four jurisdictions anyway. An anonymous aide close to the DOGGY department described the working environment during Rackham's tenure as
energetic, chaotic, and increasingly absent of office furniture.
They went on to say,
he kept telling us that less furniture meant more efficiency. Turns out, less furniture also meant fewer places to store things, like evidence.
Federal authorities are remaining tight-lipped, stating only that a routine audit is underway, and that any conclusions will be made public just as soon as they stop laughing. In a final twist, a holovid message apparently left by Rackham was recently broadcast on a closed-loop frequency across several core systems. In it, he can be seen reclining in a luxurious captain's chair, wearing a suspiciously familiar robe, holding a cocktail, and stating, turns out efficiency's a lot easier when you can just take the whole budget with you. Calico out.
In light of the recent catastrophic destabilization and fragmentary decoherence of the Thargoid Titan class entity currently situated within the Sol System's primary Sol 3 orbit, navigational authorities have once again been forced to issue high urgency advisories regarding the already fraught domain of low to medium planetary orbits, particularly those surrounding so-called Sol 3-like planets. Though current events have been dominated by spectacular footage of the Titan's bifurcation, observed as a thermally energetic event followed by an impressively luminous exogenic dispersal cloud, the underlying navigational implications are arguably more significant than the pyrotechnics. It's a well-documented fact that humanity's initial forays into orbital deployment commenced circa the mid-20th century with the seminal launch of Sputnik 1 in 1957, old Sol 3 reckoning. Since then, extrapolations indicate that over 1800 years of orbital occupation have produced an astonishing accumulation of functional, decommissioned, and miscategorized orbital matter. The resultant condition is known in contemporary astrodynamics as orbital saturation hysteresis, or in less technical parlance, a colossal and accelerating mess. The issue is particularly acute around Sol 3-like planets, whose combination of dense biospheres, high-tech civilizational output, and historical nostalgia leads to orbital layers populated not merely with satellites, but with weathered geostationary advertising platforms, commemorative cultural artifacts, and in one anomalous instance, the complete remains of a luxury cruise liner erroneously launched during the Great Martian Misclick of 2867. Now, with the disaggregation of the Thargoid Titan and its resultant ejection of biomechanical substructures and decaying hull fragments into orbital vectors spanning from 200 kilometers up to the Clark Belt, predictive models indicate an imminent increase in collision cascades, or what early 21st century theorist Don J. Kessler termed the Kessler syndrome. In modern parlance, objects smashing into other objects, producing more objects, each of which is travelling at velocity sufficient to turn a lightly armoured ship into fine metallic vapour. Compounding the matter is the fact that many ancient satellite orbits have decayed unpredictably due to minor variations in exo-atmospheric drag, magnetic field fluctuations, and the regrettable early habit of fueling retro rockets with substances now classified under interstellar environmental law as barely not weapons. For pilots operating in their 180 to 2000 kilometer orbital band, the risks are substantial. Standard planetary approach procedures now require full lateral orbit prediction telemetry, real-time automated collision vector plotting, and in some systems, the continuous sounding of an audible klaxon labelled simply duck. The Pilots Federation, in an unusually proactive display, has issued a Class 4 navigational directive advising that
transits near Earth-like worlds exhibiting significant orbital antiquity are to be considered semi-chaotic debris fields and piloted with corresponding caution.
Translation: try not to clip an 800-year-old weather satellite doing Mach 27 while you're trying to deliver biowaste. As for the remains of the Titan itself, preliminary scans suggest the dispersion field is rich in exotic matter decay products, which may offer both an analytical treasure trove and a rapidly propagating hazard. While scientists are eager to examine the fragments, salvagers have been warned that not all pieces are inert, and at least one collector's craft was recently digested. In conclusion, the orbital layers of Sol 3-like planets now represent a confluence of ancient ambition, contemporary clutter, and alien disintegration. For all aspiring navigators, a sober reminder: while hyperspace may be dangerous, at least you won't get shanked by 20th century television hardware at 7.8 kilometers per second.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we grab a quick look at the big board in the Hutton Situation Room while security drags us away again. Then we try to remember what we saw like the conveyor belt on the Generation game. This week, we continue with the expansion. I wonder where we'll pop up next. Booms are in Alpha Centauri, Barnard Star, Hokkari, Wolf 359 and Ross 671. We are in election with the Sol Workers Party and KX Libre for control of Base Point. The Green Party of Brits Amino are in for a severe doing in the election in LT7072, where Hutton is leading 3-0. There are outbreaks in AVIC and Epsilon Indy. LFT 142 sees us in war with Azimuth Biotech. It's 1-1 at the moment, so you could make the difference. Oh, and there was a cuddly toy and a tease made. But what does it all mean? Well, if you want to truck it, then truck medical supplies into AVIC or Epsilon Indy. If you want mission run, then get yourself over to LX Libre or tip the balance in LTT 7072. And if you want to shoot it, then shoot the Azimuth Biotech guys in LFT 142. And that's it for this week's Hut BGS bit.